Each country has tackled flattening the curve in its own way, and some countries like Singapore and Germany were hailed as success, able to contain infection more successfully than others. But we know this pandemic is not predictable. There are now flare-up hotspots in countries that have flattened the curve. Maggie Kurth is here to fill us in on that story and other science headlines from this week. She's senior science reporter at 538.com. Welcome back, Maggie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. Singapore was one of the first countries that was touted as a success story. What's happened?
Well, there are now 23,000 new cases that have popped up that are linked to these dormitories where foreign workers live while they work low-wage jobs on working visas in the city-state. So these workers don't get access to Singapore's social safety net. Some of them told the New York Times that they've been confined to these dorms and prevented from seeking medical care. So in some ways, it's sort of like Singapore has some of these giant cruise boats full of coronavirus cases, but just like parked on land in its city.
And so they're just starting to pop up again.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there other countries like it? What about, for example, what about Germany?
Germany is definitely one of the other ones where you're starting to see cases popping up again. Cases tripled between Monday and Tuesday, more than 900 new cases in 24 hours.
No kidding.
And that, yeah, and that jump, you know, it's not entirely clear what's causing it, but it is worth noting that it's been about a COVID incubation period's worth of time since Germany started opening its schools and businesses again. Similar thing happening in South Korea, where bars and nightclubs opened and then closed again after one guy went out for an evening on the town and seems to have passed COVID to more than 100 people.
So these are in countries that have sort of put out some of the flames of the flare-ups, and then suddenly we have them thinking, okay, it's safe to go back, and once again, it starts over again.
Right. I mean, I think one of the big messages that we should be taking away from this is that coronavirus isn't a problem you solve once and wash your hands of. You know, these curves can unflatten and they can do it in places that have big investments in testing and contact tracing. So those are things that we should be paying attention to here in a country that doesn't. You know, we're going to be having big problems keeping coronavirus under control, given that even the places with better infrastructure than we have put in place for this are having those problems.
Well, we're going to be having our own experiment in this country, aren't we? As some states are now opening up the bars, and there were big crowds this week in some of the bars I was reading about, especially in Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. My own state of Minnesota here is going to have all of the bars and restaurants open by the end of the month, and our case numbers are still going up. We have not actually flattened out yet. So that will be an experiment and we'll see what happens.
So are these countries that have flared up again, what are they doing? Just batting down the hatches one more time?
Yeah. I mean, like you see in South Korea, they closed the bars and nightclubs again, you know, kind of doubling up on the testing, working harder on the contact tracing, sometimes kind of closing down things that had previously been opened, and it just kind of becomes a game of whack-a-mole.
Mm. But we also hear about the COVID-19 numbers in Asia, you say Europe, and now here, but it's happening in other places that we don't hear much about, isn't it?
Yeah, this week a bunch of news outlets began to report on how the virus is affecting cities in Central and South America and in Africa. So the New York Times went into this project where they documented deaths from all-cause death in a number of South American cities. So basically showing how many more people are dying in those places of everything right now compared to what's normal for this time of year. That's an important stat because it's going to capture unconfirmed COVID deaths in places where you can't get tested or where you might not be able to go to a doctor. And it's also capturing deaths that aren't caused by COVID, but that wouldn't have happened if the hospitals hadn't been overloaded, right? So what we're seeing in some of these cities are huge increases in all-cause deaths compared to past years. So some of these things that they that the New York Times noted was that these stats doubled in Lima, Peru. They tripled in Manaus, Brazil, and they were five times higher than normal in Guayaquil, Ecuador. So that means that some of these cities in South and Central America are having impacts as big as what we saw in places like Italy.
And some places in Africa are reporting it and actually not reporting it, right? They're holding back.
Yeah, it's now in every African country. Some of the countries like Cameroon, Egypt, and Algeria are seeing some of the biggest increases in COVID cases in the world right now. And the U.S. Embassy announced this week that Tanzania is experiencing enough of an outbreak to overwhelm the hospitals in that country. But that can't be corroborated, though, because as the BBC reported, Tanzanian leaders stopped reporting case and fatality data for COVID on April 29th.
Let's move on to your next story. Your next story looks at how the U.S. is funding PPE around the world, or actually not funding it.
Right. So a lot of these countries, Central, South America, Africa, you know, where we're having these big outbreaks right now, they rely on U.S. State Department funds for a lot of healthcare infrastructure issues, right? And there's $900 million that the U.S. State Department has committed to international response. But it's also told the organizations that are seeking those funds that they won't be allowed to use that money to purchase PPE. When NPR talked to the State Department about that, they were told that that was specifically to reduce competition and ensure that the U.S. would have more access to PPE. But it's really worrying a lot of these organizations because it means that they're kind of left in a bind. Like, they can't purchase the protection for frontline healthcare workers. And we're talking about places where healthcare systems are already stretched pretty thin.
So why give them the money anyhow? I mean, what would they be using the money for instead?
I mean, there are other things you can do with it. Supporting people through lockdowns, for instance. You can be putting money into getting medications for people, you know, things like that. But PPE is such a huge, important part of how we protect healthcare workers. And not being able to get that really, really cripples your response.
Yeah, and also I understand that the U.S. pulled support from the WHO's program to develop drugs and vaccines for COVID-19.
Right. There's been a number of sort of nationalist turns that we've taken on international healthcare related to COVID, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Because when you think about how anything is produced, medications, vaccines, those are all international supply chains. And if we are not participating in international sharing of the outcome of those supply chains, what's that going to mean for us down the road when we need the supplies?
And that's why international cooperation is so important, to try to coordinate with everyone.
That is what the experts say.
And goodness, we'll see how that plays out. I want to talk about some good news. There is actually some good news in the world. Isn't there?
Yeah. There is. I swear there is.
And actually, it's in one of my favorite subjects. It's about coral reefs, I understand, right?
So algae, scientists have grown some algae that could help corals survive climate change better. You know, it's a long way from being used in the real world. This is just laboratory results. But it's a first step in the right direction, and I am bound and determined to end this on a high note today. So the algae live inside coral polyps, and they actually help coral eat. They kind of produce the photosynthesis that gives coral nutrition. When the temperature in the water gets too hot, the algae start to react. They can't handle it, and the coral effectively spit them out. So when you get coral bleaching, that's what's happening. The coral are, you know, vomiting out their algae and starving themselves. So scientists took some of this algae and they raised hundreds of generations of it in warmer water, effectively breeding, evolving it to be more heat tolerant and finding something that could maybe keep the coral healthier at hotter temperatures.
And hopefully then they could seed the algae around to the reefs that may be spitting out their algae or, you know, spreading the new warm tolerant algae around.
That's the idea eventually. Right now, it works in the lab, and hey, it's good news.
It is. You know, I also heard that there's a group in Florida that is growing corals in aquariums, which is very hard to do. I know I used to do that when I had my saltwater tank.
Maybe you can retire and be a coral rancher.
Ooh, that's not such a bad idea.
I will come to your coral ranch.
Maggie Kurth is senior science reporter at 538.com, bringing us some bad news and some good news this week. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much.